Her new uniform clashed with the lavender and teal, but no longer made Harris feel like an exotic bird. Severely plain midnight blue suited her, and the captain's rings on her sleeves were enough proof of her rank. Her pass to the Royal Docking Sector hung from one lapel. She'd been advised to wear it even on the public concourse.
Isn't that conspicuous?
Yes, but they'll expect you to be monitored, so they won't ask. And by the way, you are being monitored. It's in the tag, so don't leave it somewhere, or we'll have to do a full investigation. And we hate that.
Fine with me.
It wasn't, but it wouldn't do any good to argue. What she intended to do was above board anyway. She wanted to report her dismissal of some former crew to the employment agency, with her reasons, and find out if Sirkin's friend had registered for employment yet. She would like to keep Sirkin, but that meant hiring her partner. She needed to check in with the Captain's Guild, and she needed to consult her banker. She didn't know if Cecilia had paid her salary yet. It had not seemed a good time to ask Cecilia directly. Once out of the Royal Sector, she took the slideway past the exclusive shops and transferred to the tube tram for the ride to the Outer Rims. It was mid-shift of the second watch. The tram was half empty. Its other occupants, a pair of obvious tourists, rich kids, and four quiet, middle-aged men who looked like off-duty crew from a royal shuttle. Possibly they were. They got off at 3, the tourists at 4, and she rode out to 6 in splendid solitude. 6, Sector Orange, back where she'd started when she left Fleet. Now it didn't bother her the same way at all. Not in the new uniform, not with the new understanding of what being Cecilia's captain meant. She stopped by the Captain's Guild, paid her on-station fee, smiled at the warden. His hand hovered over the board.
Do you want a list for posting?
No, I'm still with Lady Cecilia. Is there much demand?
There's always a demand for those with a clean record. Lots of people want to retire here. Anything to report?
No.
Guild members were supposed to inform the guild of unusual occurrences, including those that they might not want to report to the fleet or other law enforcement. If you paid the pirates off, Fleet would want to be sure it wasn't a plot. The Captain's Guild simply wanted to know where the pirates had been and how they'd trapped you. Harris had considered whether to tell the guild about the smuggler's operation on Sweet Delight, but Olin was a guild member too. The warden's brow rose, and he stared pointedly at her royal pass. That certainly wasn't the guild's business. Harris smiled until he shrugged.
Want a room here?
No, thank you. I'm staying aboard. But can you tell me if Sagamir Olin is listed here?
The warden's eyes shifted aside.
Olin? You hadn't heard it. No, that's right. You left so fast. Olin died. Random assault.
Random assault didn't get that reaction. Harris felt her hairs prickling. Olin had been killed. Why? Because he hadn't delivered the goods? Or because he'd lost that handy ship? Or both?
When?
Let me see. 5 weeks after you left. He had been drinking, the militia said. Bar fight spilled over. Someone got him on the way home, they said.
Thanks anyway. I'd have bought him a drink. Here, put this in the memorial fund.
Ah, ex-fleet. You people do that, don't you? Whether you know someone or not.
That's right. Hear of a death, put something in. There's always someone who needs it.
Well, thank you. It's very kind. I suppose we'd do well to follow that habit ourselves, but...
Never mind. I couldn't do any less.
With a wave, she went back out before he could say more. Her mind was working too hard. He would see it on her face if she stayed. Where could she find out what had really happened without making herself conspicuous? She went on toward the banker and the employment agency. Chores first, fun later. The employment agency turned out to be fun in its own way. Now that she wasn't a suppliant, the gray and white decor merely looked functional, not cold and threatening. The receptionist might have been sniffy, but not once he saw that Royal Sector pass. Sir Bryn could see her in an hour. Harris settled into a comfortable chair to wait. The view screen and cube reader were supplemented by glossy hard copies of periodicals.
Captain Serrano?
She looked up from an article advising prudent investors to be wary of unregistered companies offering investment in heavy metal mining operations on worlds like Chisholm and Sakati. The article argued pure finance. Harris, who had been to Chisholm once, thought the influence of the Compassionate Hand there was more reason to keep clear of it. The only profits out of Chisholm would go straight to the Black Scratch. But the man standing at the door, she reminded herself, could as easily be a Compassionate Hand agent. Who were the smugglers?
Ser Bryn?
She stood and extended her hand. He shook hers. She did not let herself glance down to see if he had the telltale tattoo on the thumb web. He wouldn't, not in this position. If he'd ever had it, it would have been redone in flesh tones when he was chosen for a position on Rockhouse.
What can we do for you, Captain?
I needed to speak to you about Lady Cecilia's former employees.
His eyes flickered. He didn't like the sound of that. And of course, with the security measures on the Royal Docks, he wouldn't have heard about the new crew.
It's rather a long story. Perhaps we could discuss it privately?
The lounge where she'd been waiting had no one else in it, but she knew it would have full monitoring.
Ah, yes, Captain. Do come along to my private office.
He led the way into a spacious, luxurious office where Harris suspected wealthy clients gave their requirements for employees. It didn't look anything like the office where she'd been interviewed.
I brought along a data cube with their records and my reports on them. But for the obvious reasons, there are some details which I'd prefer not to have on cube and which you need to know. As you may or may not know, Ser Bryn, before I departed, I asked this office for any additional details on the qualifications of Lady Cecilia's existing crew. I was told there were none, and furthermore, I was told that private employers such as Lady Cecilia were furnished with, I won't say dregs because that would be insulting, but let's say with less qualified personnel than, for example, a major commercial employer. I understood the reasons, even though I didn't approve of them.
She paused to see if he had any response. Beyond a tightening around his eyes, he gave none.
Unfortunately, events on the voyage revealed how imprudent that policy was. You may have heard from Tackerman Rhodes about the death of one environmental tech, Ickland.
At this, he nodded.
Presumably you also heard that Ickland was considered to be responsible for the contraband found on the ship. I myself am not sure that he alone was responsible. Surely Captain Olin knew that the maintenance had not been performed. I had intended to pursue his responsibility, but the Guild tells me he's dead.
Yes. Random assault, Militia said.
Perhaps.
Harris steepled her fingers and waited for the twitch of muscles beside his mouth.
At Tackerman Rhodes, I found it necessary to relieve the pilot of his duties. No great hardship, since a ship that size doesn't require one if the captain is qualified.
She let that sink in, too. She knew that the agency's recommendation on crewing had cost Lady Cecilia at least 2 extra salaries.
You, of course, are not responsible for the crew's astonishing lack of training or fitness. That would be the captain's responsibility, and the captain involved is dead. But at Cerealis, most of the remaining employees tried to stage a mutiny.
What? What did you do to them?
I did nothing. They chose not to return to the ship after spending time at Hospitality Bay. Need I explain Hospitality Bay?
He shook his head. As she expected, such an elite agency would know all about the amenities of Bunny's Planet.
They didn't want to work with an ex-military captain. They felt my precautions were excessive, and this after the death of one crew member and the near death of another. You are probably not aware that a simultaneous crisis on Cerealis made Lord Thornbuckle suspect that they might be politically motivated. Lady Cecilia accepted their applications to terminate employment, and they are currently in custody on Cerealis, where they will be tried for conspiracy.
But who's crewing the ship now?
Harris could see the flicker of greed in his eyes. Surely she'd need more crew, and if she didn't get it here, she would enrich some other employment agency.
I should mention that I'm extremely pleased with one former employee, Brigdis Sirkin. That young woman has what I consider adequate qualifications, and to the extent that Lady Cecilia wishes to make crew changes, that is the level of qualification I shall insist on. Presently, the crew consists of former RSS personnel. I am not at liberty to discuss the exact way they, became employed. Only that it has both Fleet and Crown approval. However, none of them presently have civilian licenses. I shall be sending them here, where you can arrange for the transfer of skills registration and the appropriate civilian licensure into specialties. For your standard fee, of course. Unless you have some objection.
Sir Bryn gulped. Her meaning was clear to both of them. He could get his firm on the minimal profit involved in transferring registered military skills to civilian ones, the paper pusher's fee, in return for a chance to regain some chance of providing Lady Cecilia with employees later. Or he could be difficult and see that influence vanish. And possibly, considering who she was, more business vanish at the same time. Harris watched the glisten of perspiration on his forehead.
We are always glad to help Lady Cecilia in any way we can. I hope, Captain Serrano, that you do not think we had any suspicion whatsoever that any of the persons we supplied would become involved in illegal acts of any nature. We do our best to supply only the most qualified and responsible personnel.
Harris gave him her best grin and watched him flinch from it.
I'm sure you didn't. But from this time, Lady Cecilia will be understandably more selective in her dealings with you. She may be only one old lady on one small yacht, but she pays well and deserves to have the best crew. So I've explained to her. Now, do you have a young woman named Irulan, Amelie Irulan, registered with the firm?
Just a moment.
He slid out a drawer that Harris assumed contained a desk comp link and poked at it.
Irulan, yes, but she's not what you're looking for, not if what you just said...
Sir Bryn, even for me there are occasional personal matters that impinge on business. I assume from your statements that she is not as supremely qualified as, say, Sirkin.
By no means.
Would you have sent her to Lady Cecilia a year ago?
He had the grace to flush.
Well... We might have, as an entry-level tech. It's not a demanding job, after all.
Not with the ship heavily overcrewed and underutilized.
Then send me her application file and send her for an interview. To the ship. I meant what I said, and I doubt I'll hire her if she's not up to my standards, but I might hear of another slot. And, of course, I would inform you first.
That got a nod of understanding and approval.
Thank you, then, Sir Bryn. I'll have the military personnel report to your office next main shift. Is that convenient?
Yes, and thank you, Captain Serrano.
From there, Harris decided to begin opening contacts with other ship's officers. Some of her former acquaintances in the RSS would still speak to her, she thought, and the sooner she began networking again, the better. Brissom had always been a mixed bar, a place respectable officers of both fleet and civilian ships could eat and drink in proximity, if not friendship. Sometimes it was friendship of sorts. Harris remembered as a young officer being treated to dinner by the captain of a great liner who had owed favors to fleet. Now she was the civilian, finding a table on the civilian side, but not too near the windows. She didn't recognize any of the fleet officers. It didn't matter. Her heart pounded, and she argued it back to a normal rhythm. It really did not matter. She had her ship. She had her place.
Service captain?
Brissom also had human service, unless you requested otherwise. She liked it.
Yes. Main shift menu.
Harris glanced at the display, flinched inwardly at the prices, and chose a simple meal from among the day's specials.
Harris!
She looked across to the tables kept by tradition for fleet officers. A woman a few years her junior waved at her. She had clearly just walked in. Constanza Daltini, she remembered. The man with her gave Harris an uncertain look. Who would that be, she wondered. Constanza always had someone. Harris grinned and nodded, but didn't rise. She couldn't appear too eager. Besides, Constanza had curiosity enough for the whole intelligence department. After a quick conversation with her table partner, she came over to Harris. The man sat down alone, looking grumpy.
Oh, I hated that you're out. It had to be a frame-up. Rumor says Admiral Lipescu, was it?
I can't talk about it.
Not even to me?
Not even to you. But thanks for coming over.
Word is you got amnesty. You and all the rest.
That are alive.
Until she said it, Harris had not expected to say that, or with that bitterness. But that was Constanza's effect on most people.
Ah, so that's why you're not coming back?
Connie, I've got a cushy job working for a very rich old lady in a beautiful yacht. Why should I come back and get myself in more trouble?
You'll get yourself in trouble, Harris, wherever you are. It's your nature. Perhaps the one thing you inherited from your family. Hey, what do you think of him?
Him had to be the man at the table, now pointedly ignoring them.
He's handsome. Not my type, though.
He's an exec on a heavy cruiser.
That was explanation enough. Harris could read her insignia and knew from experience what limited facilities escorts had. Besides, cruiser duty helped more at promotion time than it was supposed to. Constanza still hadn't made sub-commander and had only one more board to do it.
Good luck, Connie.
Harris meant it. Constanza was a good officer whose slow promotion had more to do with her tactlessness than anything that mattered.
Don't queer your chances by hanging around with me.
I'm not. I'll just tell him you're involved with something you can't talk about.
And she was gone, with a last grin and wave. Harris wanted to wring her neck, and felt a moment of compassion for those officers who had given her less than stellar fitness reports. The rest of her meal passed without incident. She reviewed her personal finances with a link to her banker, and discovered that Cecilia had indeed transferred her salary to her account, a quarter's worth. She called up her investment files and allowed herself to order an expensive dessert in celebration. Her guesses had once more outperformed the market as a whole.
This is Amelie.
Amelie looked nervous, as well she might. Harris had reviewed her records, and she was nowhere near as qualified as Brigdis Serkin. Moreover, her credentials, such as they were, overlapped an area Harris had filled with her former crewmates. She didn't really need a third-rate engineering technician. But she did need a superb navigator, if she could keep her.
Amelie Irulan. And you're considering small ship work, too?
Amelie was smaller and rounder than Serkin.
Since Brigdis found this, and she likes it, but we quite understand if you don't have an opening in engineering.
You have a minor in environmental systems.
Yes, ma'am, but I'm not really...
She didn't have to say that. Her test scores showed it. She had barely made the lower limit of certification. Harris wished the scores would go up by themselves.
You've applied to other places, of course.
I talked to the same agency Brig used. They said to talk to you.
They had said, no doubt, that someone with her scores could whistle for a job and she'd better start doing it. Linked with Serkin, she might get a job, but more likely they'd both fail.
You do understand that your scores aren't very good.
Oh, yes, but I'm just not very good at tests. I know more than that, really. Brig can tell you.
Serkin flushed. In the months under Harris's command, she had continued to develop in her field, and contact with other ship's officers at Cerealis had shown her how much more was possible. Whatever she had thought of Amelie's ability earlier, now she knew better. Harris noted the flush.
Serkin has been aboard more than a standard year now. Your scores are your best witness. Test anxiety, you say? Didn't you ever take the Portland treatments?
Well, yes, ma'am, but I was just so busy sometimes, you know? Working part-time,
She had not worked part-time for the first 2 years, and her scores had been no better then. Serkin, whose record also showed employment during school, had finished in fewer terms with top scores. Either ability or effort was missing here. Harris wasn't sure which.
Serkin's an outstanding junior officer, as I'm sure you know. If it weren't for that, I wouldn't be considering your application. I've got a full crew in engineering, and while I could use someone in environmental, I don't want slackers. I won't tolerate anything but excellence.
The tension around the young woman's eyes said it all, as far as Harris was concerned. This one didn't want to work that hard, and would always find excuses for herself. Too bad for Serkin. Irresponsibility made for bad lovers as well as bad shipmates. But she would give it a try for the time they'd be on station, just in case.
I can understand that, ma'am, but...
Tell you what. According to the owner, we're going to be here a while doing some work on the yacht. I'll hire you as general labor, mostly environmental work, some power plant engineering, on a 30-day temp contract. You and Sirkin can job hunt together in your off-shift time. If you satisfy me and don't find something you like better, I may offer you a longer contract then. But I won't promise anything. How's that?
That didn't satisfy Amelie, though she forced a smile, but Sirkin was relieved. She had clearly expected refusal.
We'll be installing quite a bit of replacement electronics, and a new backup set of power plant control systems. The environmental system was overhauled thoroughly only a few months ago, but given the state of the former system, I want a complete baseline calibration.
Yes, ma'am.
Sirkin, take her over to engineering and introduce her to Haidar. He's the environmental first, Irulan. I'll post the relevant orders on the comp for him.
Amelie started to open her mouth.
Thank you, ma'am.
Sirkin pulled her friend along by the arm. Harris shook her head once they were out of sight. What a shame that a brilliant young person like Sirkin had fallen for a loser. She was sure Amelie was a loser. She had seen too many of that type. Over the next few days, Nazaru Haidar reported that Amelie Irulan was reasonably willing when supervised, but lacked the expertise she should have had and wouldn't stick to a job without constant supervision.
About what I thought. Can you perk her up? Maybe that school...
I can try, but how much do you want to risk on her? She'll never go beyond third class on the exams, I'd bet my last credit chip. Half the work would do twice as much with a good candidate.
Well, we're not in the service anymore. We don't have an endless supply of recruits. I was hoping...
I'll work on it, but I won't promise anything. I know Sirkin's good, but young love doesn't last forever.
Don't try to tell them that. We have to remember we're all a lot older and with real experience.
That one'll get herself killed and maybe her friends. Amelie's like that cute little kid back on Fisk.
Harris raised her brows, but he didn't back down. The cute little kid on Fisk had been the nephew of someone important, and he had hit the wrong control in combat and, luckily, died along with those his idiocy killed. Turned out his uncle had known about the addiction problem, but concealed it in the hopes that life on a ship would straighten him out.
Well, if she's that bad, we don't want her. I know that. But as long as we're in dock, she can't hurt us that much, and we just might pull off a miracle.
Harris had called the crew together before giving them station liberty.
There's a slight chance that you may have some trouble dockside. Those of you who were aboard at the time know about the smuggler's stash. If they choose to retaliate for its loss...
But they've already killed Olin.
Wouldn't they go after Lady Cecilia? Or the ship itself?
They might. But they also might make an example of a crew member.
Harris knew her ex-military crew would know how to handle any invitations to criminality. But Sirkin and Irulan were young and vulnerable. Bait for everything from gambling sharks to smugglers.
I suggest you travel in pairs, at least, and keep your eyes open. I'm not sure just how far they'll go to express their displeasure. If you want to indulge in anything mind-altering, be sure you're in a safe place.
Oblo, as usual, with a fight even remotely in view, looked both sleepy and happy. The sleepiness was entirely deceptive.
If there's trouble, how about weapons?
No, not on station. We don't need legal trouble as well as illegal. And given Lady Cecilia's, connections, we could even have political trouble. Fight if you have to, but call for the police right away.
Yes, ma'am.
Oblo's heavy-lidded look meant he would interpret it in his own way. Petrus gave him a sharp glance, and Harris made a mental note to talk to Petrus about Oblo before he had to shift off. His formidable brawling skills should be reserved for times they needed them, not wasted on casual displays. Under the supervision of Nazaru Haidar, Irulan earned her pay. Harris had to respect her for coming back shift after shift to face the grudging acceptance of the rest of the crew. Sirkin, she noticed, stayed clear of Irulan during work hours, but she was looking increasingly tense. Harris assumed that meant they hadn't found a joint berth on some other ship. Sirkin would be facing a hard decision soon enough. Harris didn't try to offer advice she was sure the younger woman would resent. On the day they completed the new installations, which would be sealed again when the yacht entered the refitting docks, Harris gave the crew a half-shift bonus off. She gave Janice the standing watch and finished the interminable forms necessary to clear the royal docks and transfer the ship around the station on the next main shift but one. She hated the thought of letting a tug do the shift, but those were the rules. She expected all the off-duty crew to be gone by the time she finished, but as it happened, she left the ship just behind Sirkin and Irulan. They were not quite holding hands as they hurried through the royal sector to the public concourse beyond. They seemed to be headed the same direction she was. Harris hung back, hoping they wouldn't think she was following them, but traffic was light just before shift change. In another half hour, all transit tubes would be crowded. She dawdled, glancing at a shop window down the concourse from the Captain's Guild, until they were nearly out of sight around the curve. Harris turned into the Captain's Guild, mentally shaking her head. When she'd been that young, she hadn't been unlucky enough to fall that far in love. Sirkin and Irulan were together, but it could hardly be called alert awareness of possible danger. It would do no good to suggest anything to them. They might try, but in 20 paces they'd be back to concentrating on each other. At least Sirkin had basic good sense, and they had promised to bunk aboard until the decorators took the ship over. Surely they wouldn't get in much trouble. After all, Oblo had the history of dockside and planetside brawls. The Captain's Guild rooms had begun to look familiar, and the warden knew her now. She posted her daily report and looked over the news. Here again, the different format had begun to make sense. Which ships were in, with which captains, reporting changes they'd noted in their routes. She was looking specifically for anything to suggest what Captain Olin had been doing in the regions, where he'd hung about as if looking for a rendezvous. So far, she'd found no comment helpful. After all, if another captain was up to the same game, she could hardly expect an honest report to the Captain's Guild.
Captain Serrano's following us. We're off duty. She doesn't have to...
Captain's Guild's down this way. Don't get paranoid, Amelie. She isn't bothering us.
I just wish she'd mind her own business.
Irulan glanced over her shoulder and turned back.
Or catch up. Something.
What have you done or not done that you think she'll scold you for? You're trying, aren't you?
Of course I am. But it's a lot harder than school. That Hadar is so picky. I wish he... I swear, he watches me every second, and he wants everything to be just so.
But you're learning, and we're together.
Sirkin had overheard some of Hydar's comments. He didn't think the captain should hire Irulan permanently. She forced herself not to think about it. They had a full three-shift off, and for once, the money to enjoy it.
Where shall we eat? Why not a dinner dance place like Khalifa's?
Irulan grinned at her, the grin she had first fallen for, and gave a little skip-step.
Great, but why not up top first, to get in the mood?
I'm already in the mood.
Sirkin ran a finger down Irulan's arm. Irulan tossed her head.
Patience is a virtue.
They both knew who had the patience. Sirkin wished Irulan didn't like noisy taverns like up top, but she'd have put up with worse for the evening to come. By the time they reached up top, it was crammed with main shift rush hour business, vibrating to the beat of its music. Sirkin saw a sonic cop check her meter from across the corridor, shrug, and go on. Well bribed, perhaps. She inserted her own filters and followed Irulan inside. They stood with a clump of others waiting for space at the bar or booths. Remembering the captain's warning, she tried to notice anything out of the ordinary, but she didn't like this kind of place anyway. Against her hip, she felt Irulan's hip twitch to the music. She wouldn't be wearing sonic filters. She liked it this loud. Sirkin had to admit that the bass resonances dancing up her bones from heel to spine were exciting, but she wished the higher tones didn't tangle her eardrums in the middle of her skull. Two seats finally opened at a large table. Irulan nodded before Sirkin had a chance to see everyone clearly, but she shrugged and followed the flashing arrow on the floor. Two women in matching gray with a yellow stripe, Lions Incorporated, but probably not ship crew, since they were hunched over a digipad poking at it with styluses. Probably accountants. A man in rusty black, Sirkin was glad he sat on the far side of the table. A woman and two men in nondescript blue playing some sort of game on the table's projector. An elegant woman, hair streaked with silver, whose Saloui silk suit probably cost more than all the other clothes at the table. The empty seats were between her and the Lions Incorporated women. Irulan edged in beside the older woman.
She would.
Irulan had a passion for jewels, the classic case of champagne tastes on a beer budget, and the woman wore jewelry as costly and elegant as her clothes. Sirkin wondered what she was doing there. She wasn't much like the rest of Uptop's clientele. She herself squeezed in beside Irulan and looked at the table's display. She wanted wine with dinner. She really didn't want anything now.
Let's have a mixed fry as well, or will it spoil your appetite?
If we're gonna eat a good dinner, why?
Oh, there's no hurry, is there? I think I just want to cram it all in, love. All the good things we like. I can see the signs as well as you can. Your Captain Serrano isn't going to hire me, and this may be our last chance to celebrate together.
Implicit in that was the understanding that she, Sirkin, wasn't going to quit the Sweet Delight to work wherever Irulan found a berth. Nor would Irulan wait. Her eyes stung. She hadn't admitted it to herself yet, but it was true. She drew a breath, trying to think how to say what she really felt. Irulan punched her arm lightly.
Don't spoil it now. Let's just party and enjoy it.
She reached out and entered an order for both of them. Sirkin didn't cancel it. Right then, she didn't care. The mixed fries, hot and spicy, gave her an excuse for watering eyes. The first gulp of her drink took the edge off both spice and emotion. Was Irulan trying to anesthetize her, or what? She glanced sideways and saw that Irulan was smiling at the elegant older woman. Great. Drag her into a place like this and then ignore her.
Amelie, look. Maybe we should go somewhere and talk.
No, talk's the last thing we need.
Irulan shook her head decisively and reached for more fries. Sirkin shrugged and sat back. Even with filters, her ears hurt. Irulan poked her.
Wake up, Brig. Kirsia here has asked us to dine with her.
Sirkin peered around Irulan at the elegant woman, startled out of her mood and into wariness. Had Irulan known her before?
I met Kirsia while waiting for Sweet Delight to arrive. I wanted you to meet her before, but we've been so busy.
Was this her replacement? But she had to say something. Kirsia was reaching around to shake her hand.
Glad to meet you.
At least she didn't have to say how much she'd heard, since she'd heard nothing. Surely Irulan could have mentioned her.
And I asked Amelie to let me be a surprise. I hope it doesn't bother you.
Bother was the wrong word. Sirkin felt that she was somehow in the wrong when she hadn't done anything. Yet.
I'm Amelie's therapist.
Sirkin glanced at Irulan, whose cheeks were slightly flushed.
Therapist? What's wrong? I'm sorry, I know it doesn't mean anything's wrong, it's
just...
I
was really miserable waiting for you. I got into a little mess, sort of, and they recommended therapy.
Who's they?
The, station police. They said no charges might be filed if I agreed to short-term therapy, and Kirsty really helped me. We got to be friends.
Sirkin bit back all she was thinking and simply nodded. Memories flooded her. The day she'd first seen Amelie Irulan in the registration line, fumbling with a stack of forms and data cubes. What had it been, the look in her green eyes or the quick toss of her hair? The study dates, the walks by the lake, the long, intense discussions of their future?
It's not what you think. Of course, I still love you. I always will.
I see.
Sirkin wanted just to stop the process, whatever it was. She made herself meet the older woman's eyes.
Is this meeting your idea?
Kirsia smiled. It was a very mature smile.
A meeting, certainly. But Uptop was Amelie's idea. In my experience, meetings should take place where the client is comfortable. Not that Amelie is my client anymore, of course.
Of course.
I certainly wasn't planning to intrude on your evening together. I did want to meet the person who had been so important in Amelie's life. Perhaps we could chat a bit another time where it's quieter?
Of course.
Sirkin couldn't think what about. Perhaps this woman thought she would come for therapy too. She turned to Irulan.
Well, Amelie, just what kind of mess did you get yourself into? Or is that confidential now?
Oh, I was playing Gorla and I sort of, well, overdid it.
Gambling again. She'd promised to quit, and since she hadn't shown up broke or in debt, Sirkin thought maybe she'd really reformed.
How bad?
No worry. I got a temp job with Kirsia's help and paid it off. And I know I shouldn't have gambled at all. I promised you. But it was only that once.
It wouldn't have been only that once, but Sirkin knew it would be useless to argue. She found herself cataloging the things she had loved about Amelie Irulan from the beginning, from the color of her hair to the sound of her laugh, as she would have cataloged the attractions of a navigating system she would never use again. Already, Amelie belonged to the past, although she sat there, eyes wide and excited. Sirkin felt a cold lump in her belly and wished she could evaporate like the spilled drinks. Kirsia, with an understanding look that Sirkin wanted to remove from her face with a blaster, turned to Irulan.
Well, what have you two planned for the evening?
Caliphas for dinner, maybe some dancing, then a party wherever we find one. We're in the mood for fun, aren't we, Brig?
Sirkin forced a smile to meet Kirsia's. She would not, absolutely not, show that cradle-robbing sleaze what she felt.
Celebration!
Kirsia looked confused a moment, then pushed back her chair.
Then I'd better get along and let you enjoy it. By the way, if you didn't happen to see the announcement, they closed the F-way slides for repair. So if you're going to Caliphas, it's shorter from here to use the number 11 bounce tube and then that shortcut through Avery Park, then go all the way back to the G-way slides.
Thank you.
Shortcut through Avery Park, indeed. She had more sense than that. And she'd bet that Kirsia never went there. Not dressed in silk and jewels, anyway.
We're in no hurry. There's a shop on the G-way that I'd like to visit anyway.
She had meant to buy Irulan a certain piece of jewelry there. Now, she didn't know, but she certainly didn't want to follow Kirsia's suggestion. The older woman shrugged, gave Irulan a smile that seemed entirely too warm, and squeezed past other chairs on her way out. She had an elegant back, long and supple, and Sirkin saw how many others noticed it.
She really helped me. I'd hoped you'd like her.
I'm glad.
Sirkin couldn't deal with the second part of that. Her throat had closed. She didn't want any more of the spicy fries.
Are you ready?
Irulan glanced around and leaned closer.
Look, I know you're upset, but let's not spoil the evening. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Serana will hire me. If she does, I'll do anything I can to stay on her good side. At least we can enjoy this.
Right. But I'm not really in the mood for more fries, and you're not eating them now, so could we please go someplace where the music doesn't split my brain?
All right.
Irulan twitched her shoulders and pushed away from the table. Sirkin followed her out, sighing internally. But out in the open, Irulan seemed to relax, and they walked together as they always had. They stopped to look in shop windows. Irulan thought a blue and violet wrap would look good on Sirkin, and Sirkin shrugged and agreed to try it on. The shop wasn't much out of their spending range, though they both agreed the wrap didn't look that good out of the shop.
Maybe it'll be all right this time. Maybe.
Sirkin was still thinking that when Irulan turned toward the number 11 bounce tube entrance.
Hey, let's go back the G-Way slides. There's a place I wanted to show you.
Maybe after dinner. I saw the look on your face. You're just afraid of Avery Park. And that's silly at this time of day. It's not that far past shift change rush, and it's only second shift anyway.
Sirkin glanced around. Traffic had eased, but it was busy enough. The bounce tube entrance had a short line. If they waited until after dinner, the park would be even more dangerous.
Hey, Amelie!
The man wore ordinary spacer's coveralls, but no ship patch. He had appeared suddenly in the park, just when Sirkin had been thinking how empty it was, how silly it had been to object to the shortcut. Sirkin felt the twitch in Irulan's hand. Someone she knew then, and someone she didn't really want to see. An ordinary face, perhaps a bit paler than average, with lank gray-brown hair.
That's your friend you told us about, eh? Handsome.
Back off, Curris. We're not interested in your games.
Oh, you got games of your own, eh?
Sirkin did not like the looks of him, or of the three men and two women with him. All, like him, wore spacer's coveralls with not a ship patch among them. Bad sign. Station dwellers didn't wear spacer's clothes. They had their own styles that didn't offer as many hiding places for weapons.
Ooh, she looks a bit nervous, Emily. Didn't you tell her about the party?
We're not coming. That's why I came up here, to tell you. We've got other plans.
Oh, no, that's not friendly, sweetie. You know what we agreed. You're just a party, that's all. Just a chance to chat with your friend here.
No.
Sirkin realized suddenly that Irulan was really scared, not just nervous. That the tension of the past hour or so had had little to do with her, and a lot to do with this man and the party he mentioned.
Curcia knows about it. She approved the change of plans.
I don't think so. You're as bad at lying as you are at gambling, Amelie.
You...
Sirkin touched Amelie's arm.
Let's go, Amelie. No sense talking.
Now there's where you're wrong.
The man switched his gaze to her face. Sirkin tried not to shiver visibly. She had known they shouldn't come this way. Now she wondered how far away a security alarm was.
There's a lot of sense in talking when the alternatives are less pleasant.
A gleam in his hand, in another hand or two in that group. All Captain Serrano's warnings came back to her, and everything her former crew had added. But she didn't have that training. She had no idea what to do when faced with people like this in a shadowy corner where she should never have come. Yet she couldn't have let Amelie come this way alone, could she?
We have nothing to talk about. We're meeting friends.
I don't think so. That's not what we heard from Curcia. She says you two were planning a quiet little farewell dinner. But Amelie really prefers a party, don't you? Oh, she's quite a party girl, our little Amelie. Now, we'll have us a nice chat, and you'll find us a friendly bunch, eh?
No.
Irulan's hand closed over hers.
Brig, don't!
She didn't have to say more. There were the weapons, the bulbous snout of a very illicit sonic pulser, familiar from entertainment cubes, and several plasteel knives. Sirkin felt her mouth go dry. The advice she'd had, never go with the attacker. The place you're accosted is the most dangerous for the attacker, and the place he takes you is safer for him, now seemed impossible to follow. Her imagination leaped ahead to the effects of sonic pulser and knife. She saw blood, felt the pain. What could they do? She tried to look around without moving her head, but saw nothing helpful, no one she could call for help. The man gestured with the sonic pulser.
Come on, it's party time, girls.
You're gonna spoil their fun.
Not me. If they find a nice room and spend the night together, fine. But that's not the mood Irulan's in. She's out for trouble of some kind. I know that look.
You should. You're always up for trouble.
Captain will be upset if we let Sirkin get trashed because of Irulan's stupidity. You know what she thinks. And besides, the girl's worth working on. She could have been fleet. And they'll never know we're watching, unless something goes sour.
I can think of things I'd rather do on my off shift.
Fine. Let me do it.
Ugh, not you alone. I know better.
They lounged in the doorway of Up Top, drinking pirate chasers from the outside bar.
There's a classy one sitting with him. Doesn't fit in here.
I don't like her looks. Acting like a shill. Let's check her out.
Methlin pulled out her very illicit fleet data capture wand.
Good idea.
Methlin pointed it at the overdressed woman for a moment, capturing her image, then looked around for a public data port.
Go on. I'll wait here.
Methlin found a port two shops down, and it even had a privacy shield. Her wand stabbed into the port and overrode the usual restriction codes, sucking the data she wanted out of the station computers. When she slid the wand into the port of her hand comp, the display showed everything the station personnel files knew about Curcia, Melotis Davron.
A therapist?
No.
That's what it says. License and everything. Does work for the station militia. Mostly addicts up for minor stuff. Has interesting friends.
Oh?
That agency.
They both knew which agency. Harris had told them her suspicions about the employment agency before sending them over to get their civilian licenses and ratings. It had smelled as rotten to them as it had to Harris.
Finds jobs for clients sometimes.
Ah. Sounds whole to me. You got it?
Got it. Who?
The kids. We'll stay with the kids, but put a ferret on the tinker.
They retreated across the corridor. Methlin slid the wand into another public connection and transmitted both the data on Curcia and Oblo's request to the Sweet Delight.
Uh-huh. As she goes. Huh. Just passed a signal, too. Wonder who that was.
I didn't see. Oh, yes. Classy rear view the lady has.
Keep your mind on business.
When Sirkin and Irulan came out, Oblo could tell that they were at odds. He and Mahari dropped back a little. No need to embarrass Sirkin if she suddenly stormed back this way.
Just a little chat. Just a suggestion your friend wasn't confident enough to take.
I don't need to chat with you. If Amelie didn't want to do it, I don't either.
Unwise. Now, you're smart enough to know she's not. And we're offering an unusual opportunity here. We'd pay well for a contact aboard the Sweet Delight. No risk worth mentioning and a profit. And no harm done to your employer, if that bothers you.
No risk? Like Captain Olin?
He didn't follow instructions. He upset the old lady, got himself fired. And then we hear that Icklin died and the goods were discovered because he was trying to double his profit with a payoff to the refitters. He double-crossed us. We couldn't let that pass.
Suppose not.
Sirkin had been hoping someone would come into the park, but no one did. Had these people somehow cut it off from the corridors? Had they bribed the station militia?
Don't hurt her!
Convince her, then.
No! Let her alone! It's not her fault! She had nothing to do with it, any of it!
Get out of the way!
No!
He lifted the weapon, his finger tightening, and Irulan launched herself in useless rage and blood. Irulan curled into the agony as the sonic pulsar focused its lethal vibrations on her. Sirkin, on the edge of that cone, felt as if someone had stabbed her brain with a needle. Tears burst from her right eye and she lurched sideways. The man strode forward, but somehow Irulan grabbed at his leg and tripped him. Sirkin, fighting off the dizziness of the sonic attack, managed to knock the weapon out of his hand before he could turn it on Irulan again. The others joined the melee then, knives and fists and boots. Sirkin tried to get to Irulan, but one of them slammed an elbow into her face, and another kicked her legs out from under her. She hit someone, then a blow in the belly took all her breath. And Irulan, she couldn't see. She couldn't hear anything but the slam of boots and fists. A hand came over her mouth, and she twisted her head and bit hard. A blow to the head that made her eyes water. Someone yanking her arms up behind her. Then the feeling that someone else had arrived. Sirkin tried to break the arm hold and find a way to strike back. Another kick, this one in the ribs. She felt something crunch, and then someone fell on top of her. Hard knees and elbows and too much weight. She couldn't breathe. She couldn't complain about not breathing. Her vision grayed out, and the next blow sent her into darkness.
Captain Serrano!
That was the warden. Harris wondered why he hadn't simply buzzed her Carol until she saw his face. He was gray around the lips, his eyes showing too much white. She came at once, ignoring a few surprised glances from other captains who had noticed the warden's unusual invasion of the inner rooms. Harris didn't bother to ask. She simply followed him back to the reception area. He almost scurried. Waiting for them were two uniformed station security police, faces grim. Harris felt her heart begin to pound, a great hammer. If they had come, instead of asking her to visit one of the wait stations, whatever had happened was serious, even fatal.
Captain Serrano, I'm Detective Morin Canabar. We have a problem concerning your crew.
Who is it?
We aren't sure, Captain Serrano. The body carried identification as a member of your crew, but...
Harris felt herself going cold, the protective freeze of emotion that would carry her through any necessary action.
Do you need me to identify the body?
It's not going to be easy, ma'am. She's a young woman, that's all we can tell. Hit with a sonic pulsar, then pretty well beaten to a pulp.
Let it not be Sirkin.
Harris hated herself for thinking that. Irulan might be a bit lazy and not overbright, but she had not deserved anything that would put that expression on the faces of police officers.
I'll come now. I have two young female crew members, and they are both off duty at present. Can you tell me something about it?
Someone wanted her dead. Messily. Either of them have enemies you know about?
You know I filed a report when we arrived that my crew might be the target of retaliation from some criminal organization, and that I had been contacted subsequently by someone whose credentials worried me.
Yes, but you didn't know many details. Made it hard for us to help you.
True. Nonetheless, my guess is this young woman ran afoul of that group, not an enemy of her own. Neither of them had been on this station very long. One arrived with my ship, and the other met her here after finishing her technical training. I don't suppose you know where the other is.
No, ma'am. If it's some group like you're thinking of, and they were together, then I'd expect both.
Harris walked along between them, trying not to feel trapped.
So would I. Where are we going? The morgue?
No, ma'am. We'd like you to see the body in place, in case you can help us figure out what happened.
In place meant in a corner of Rock House she'd never known about.
It's a park, actually. Reasonably safe during shift changes because it's a shortcut from a concentration of civilian housing units to two big employers. There's a primary school that uses it during main shift for recreation and exercise. But it's a bit out of the way, especially mid-shift on second. And the usual patrol had a domestic disturbance call and missed two rounds through here.
Planned?
Harris could see the cluster of people working ahead under brilliant lighting.
Maybe. Can't tell. It's a family with a history. This time they'll be split up for a while. See if that settles them.
Then they were close enough for Harris to see the bodies under the lights. She recognized Irulan by the hair and clothes. The young woman's face was disfigured by parallel knife slashes, the skin reddened by the sonic pulsar wound.
That's mine.
Right. Do you know which?
Amelie Irulan. On temporary contract. She left the ship today about when I did, and that's what she was wearing. Also the hair.
That ginger-colored hair, once fluffy, and now matted with blood.
You don't seem that upset by the other...
My background's fleet. Regular space service.
Let them think she was a cold-hearted military bitch. It was easier than explaining that her feelings would come later when she felt safe. That she would have the right number of nightmares about the ruin of Amelie Irulan's face, enough to prove her own humanity. She braced herself for criticism, but the man merely nodded.
Right. You've seen combat trauma, then. This was sonic pulsar. Plus, I suspect being on the ground in the midst of a major brawl, we think the knife wounds were after death. Maybe accidental. The autopsy will check for that.
Harris stared at the parallel wounds across Irulan's face and the deep gash between thumb and first finger on both hands.
Those marks. The last time I saw something like that, it was a compassionate hand action.
Yeah, I wondered if you'd know.
We were called to Chisholm once. They had trouble with their ore haulers being hijacked between the in-system stations and the jump point insertion.
They could look that up in her service record, the public part. They had had more trouble than that, but the rest was classified.
Two of the dead bodies had CH marks on the thumb web. Did Irulan...
Certainly not. Not overt, anyway. But you're right. That hand cut's usually given to traitor members, not stray associates.
You recognize any of the others?
None of the others had mutilated faces beyond a bruise or two. She knew none of them. But something about the pattern of injuries on two... She frowned. Suddenly it came clear. The time she had had to get Oblo out of trouble. The miners he'd felled had exactly the same marks.
None of them are my crew. We've been staying close to ship most of the time, getting it ready to leave the Royal Docks.
I know. I didn't really think you would recognize him, but it was a chance. And do you say this Irulan, was it, usually had a companion?
Yes, she did tonight. Brigda Sirkin, my navigator first. They'd known each other at school, and Irulan had hoped I'd hire her. Unfortunately, she wasn't nearly as qualified.
Was Sirkin going to leave your crew?
I'm not sure. I had hoped not, but they were close. She had a tough decision coming up. I hope Sirkin's not a prisoner or anything.
We can't tell. Five dead, including your crew member. This Sirkin must be some kind of fighter if she didn't have help. Someone badly wounded got away that direction.
He pointed to smears of blood heading to the far end of the little park.
There's all too many ways out down there. Oh, we're looking. But two bounce tubes and a slideway.
Harris looked again at the dead she already thought of as enemy. She couldn't see the thumbweb marks from here. Probably they were flesh-colored tattoos, designed to fluoresce under UV light. But the pattern, she thought of Oblo. One of the dead had been hit by someone shorter, she thought, but this wasn't her field of expertise. Shorter than Oblo would be most of her crew, but her mind drifted to her weapons specialists. Arkady Janice had the standing watch. He wouldn't have been here. Methlin Mehari, perhaps? Those sleepy green eyes had fooled more than one, but her unarmed combat skills topped even Arkady's. And the two of them could have got Sirkin away. Somewhere. Where?
Captain Serrano? Urgent message from your ship. Shall I put it on the local tap line?
Harris hoped that meant they'd gotten Sirkin back to the ship safely. She nodded and stepped over to the little communications booth set up for the investigators.
Captain, hate to bother you, but we've got a problem here.
Yes, Mr. Petrus, I'm dealing with one here, too. It seems Irulan has been killed by thugs, and the investigating officers have found no sign of Sirkin.
Right. I'm at the Royal Security Office at the Access. The officer in charge prefers your personal authorization before passing some of our crew members who have had an accident. The scanners picked up bloodstains.
How many?
Mr. Visishwan, Miss Mehari, and Miss Sirkin, with injuries.
Such formality could only mean trouble. No one had called Oblo Mr. Visishwan since his second tour. At least Sirkin was alive.
Would it help if I spoke to Royal Security?
Maybe. Here's Major DeFritt.
Your crew seems to have a talent for trouble.
I hardly think that's justified.
Actually, Oblo had more than a talent for it. Genius, more like. But it wasn't something to brag about.
Are any of my crew injured?
Ms. Sirkin seems to have some injuries, but I would judge them not serious. She's conscious and her vital signs appear within normal limits.
I'd prefer to have Sirkin evaluated by medical personnel. You are not, I gather, a physician?
Well, no, but...
Since one of my crew died from a murderous assault and Sirkin is injured, it would be prudent to have her examined, don't you think?
But that would mean admitting her to this sector, unless you want her sent to the central clinic.
Major, Sirkin has a valid Royal Docs pass, as have my other crew members. You have no real reason to exclude them. I can understand that you might want to escort them to medical care. But... I will be there as soon as possible, and I expect to find my crew members receiving adequate medical treatment.
Watching her, the militia communications tech raised his eyebrows. Harris winked, and they went up another notch.
Let me speak with my second-in-command.
Yes, Captain?
I believe the Major understands the need for Sirkin to receive immediate medical evaluation and treatment. I'd like you to stay with her. If Mr. Visishwan is not injured, I'd like him to meet me in the access area on my return. Ms. Mehari can return to the ship if she needs no medical care, and I'll speak to her there. Clear?
Clear, Captain.
Well, my other crew member has shown up, wounded apparently, at the Royal Docks access station. I don't know if she was trying to get help or what. I know you'll need to talk to her, but I think her medical care should come first.
I'll come with you. You want to leave now? What about the disposition of your crew member's remains after autopsy?
I'm not sure. I'll have to check my files aboard.
Harris would have to ask Sirkin, most likely. Anything but token cremation would be impossibly expensive. Most who died aboard went into the carbon cycle tanks. But it was always possible that Irulan had taken out a burial insurance policy that would pay for shipping her body to a planet for real burial. Harris felt guilty that she had not known even this about the girl.